The Observer's Calendar for March 2024 on episode 404 of the Actual Astronomy Podcast. I'm Chris, and joining me is Shane. We are amateur astronomers who love looking up at the night sky, and this podcast is for anyone else who likes going out under the stars. So, Shane, episode 404, this is a special episode because you know what NGC 404 is?
Not offhand, I don't.
This is Merak's ghost.
Oh, I thought it couldn't be found.
That's right. Yeah, I thought it couldn't be found. Yeah. But this is that little elliptical galaxy up there in the constellation of Andromeda, just off of, strangely enough, the star Merak. It's like right beside it. So, yeah, you need some pretty good conditions to see that. So, I used to live in apartment 404, and people used to say, Chris cannot be found. 404.
Yep. Makes sense.
Getting observing in this week?
No, I did not. Work is getting a little bit busier in conditions. I think we only had maybe one or two nights that were conducive to some observing, but unfortunately, no. How about you?
And the moon.
Yeah, the moon's up, which, you know, is something to look at too, but I would have been out if I would have had the better opportunity. It just didn't work out for me.
There was one night I almost went out, but so I think it might have been Thursday. It was either Wednesday or Thursday night was pretty good. And I was just going to go out and look at Jupiter. And I was pretty excited to go out and set up and look at Jupiter. But for this is that we had an inversion here and our air quality was poor. It was just barely poor. It wasn't like terrible, terrible. But I, you know, it's kind of like one of those things. There was like, forget what the chemical is in the air. And I was like, I don't know if I want to expose my optics to this. Like there was some, just this one chemical, it just had built up in our lower atmosphere here. And I was just like, it's probably not good for me to breathe in that in because I've had a lot of asthma lately and might not be great for the optics. So I was like, I'm just going to stay in. I've been doing some of these practice sketching. I think I sent a couple along to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They look good. You know, that's kind of, to me, this time of the year, you know, you sort of do more of these indoor projects, and or at least I do, whether it's cleaning optics or rearranging a eyepiece case or whatever, or, you know, as you've done here, just practiced some sketching.
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing, just kind of setting up on the kitchen table and just trying to push the limits of what I can sketch, basically, with some older photographs from like, I think like the 60s or early 70s or something like that. And I think it's Verenberg's Atlas of Deep Sky Splendors or something like that. And it has some older photos in there. So I've just been sketching off that. I can pretty much copy a photograph. I think I got pretty good at it.
No, that's good.
Yeah. Took a few weeks and I can pretty much take one of the photographs that are in black and white, and they're detailed, but it's not like super crazy, you know, fantastical colors like you see in magazines these days. So, but it's definitely more, I think, than what you can see through an eyepiece. I think that's probably a fair assessment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So then it's, because what Alex Massey was saying, so Alex Massey is a sketcher from Australia. And when I get stuck, because I'm using a technique that he's detailed out on through online forums and videos and such, and then through personal communication, when I get stuck, I go back to him and say, okay, I'm following like your instructions. I get to this point, but you know, I'm having some trouble. And then he kind of helps get me over the hump. And one of them was getting a short bristle brush and then some better pigments. And I was talking to another listener, Royce, and he made a recommendation for some of these other pens, and the pens had just arrived just as I was sketching yesterday. So those new pens are pretty good. They're called Bright gel pens or something like that. But anyway, they work pretty good. But yeah, certainly won't be seeing this level of detail at the eyepiece. But the trick is to kind of push yourself beyond, like to be able to sketch beyond probably what you'll see. And then, of course, as you kind of ratchet back a little, you'll be able to sketch what you can see faster and to be able to not just be pushing yourself at the limits of what you can see in your sketches, but you'll already sort of have that well in hand. At least that's the theory. As Alex explained it to me, I think I could be getting this wrong. So I'd like to get him on the show. I keep forgetting to ask him. So plus the old 17-hour difference with most places in Australia is a bit of a of a bother to work through, eh?
Yeah, that's challenging for sure.
So this month we have a couple asteroids at opposition, Gegenschein to see, have some planet lineups with the moon, Mercury as well placed in the evening sky. And yeah, maybe we'll get rolling with what people can actually see.
Let's do it.
March 2nd is the last quarter moon. So that's kind of when our skies open back up for our deep sky, dark sky observing windows. Any plans this month? Hopefully we get some warmer weather. There's some minus 20s in our forecast again, unfortunately.
Yeah, it looks a little bit unstable coming up. So we'll have to see what, you know, it really turns into. But I don't know if I've mentioned it while we've recorded, but I have an uncle who has a rural farm in southeastern Saskatchewan, and I would like to go there for a weekend if everything aligns, you know, weather and, you know, free time and all of that, and take a telescope and do some observing there.
Nice.
And catch some of the kind of late winter and stay up late enough and catch the early spring constellations and, you know, hopefully get some good observing in there. How about you?
Yeah, I'd like to do the same if we can get into some decently warm weather. It's still a little too cold at my cabin to do much out there as far as kind of staying over yet or anything like that. But maybe if we can get into some plus fives for, you know, probably 4 or 5 days would do the trick, then I can be using it. I don't know if we're going to get there by this next new moon period, but things can turn around pretty quick. Never know.
Yeah, that's right.
Fingers crossed. We got asteroid Juno at opposition on March 3rd. It's going to be at magnitude 8.7. So you need a good pair of binoculars or a small little telescope to see it. Didn't write down which constellation's in, but Juno is one of the largest asteroids in the asteroid belt, discovered in 1804 by German astronomer Karl Harding. And this was the third asteroid discovered. It's one of the 20 largest asteroids by size. It's an S-type stony asteroid and contains about 1% of the mass of the asteroid belt. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. And, you know, relatively bright. Certainly a telescope will have no problem with that. Binoculars might be a little bit of a challenge depending on how big they are.
And how dark your sky is. I think I can see magnitude 8.7 in my 7x30s from the cabin.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely 12x30s.
Yeah.
12 by 30. What are they? 12 by 35s. Is that what 36, they are?
12 by 36. 36.
Yeah. And definitely I can see that because I can see like 8th magnitude planetary nebulas with them. So
okay,
that's no problem. I can nail that. March 4th, Gegenschein is visible from a dark site. And you look sort of high overhead, you know, a little bit to the south. Visible from March 4th for about 2 weeks' time. So do you remember what the Gegenschein is, Shane?
I always forget the details around this other than sort of a soft glow up there.
Yeah, and that's what it is. That's what it looks like. It's a soft glow, anti-solar point, basically overhead around the midnight hour. And essentially, this is just sunlight scattering off interplanetary dust, and the dust orbits around the sun and the planet of the ecliptic. And there's also a possible concentration of particles centered in and around the L2, that Lagrangian point between the Earth and the Sun. And isn't that where the James Webb Space Telescope is stationed?
I think it is.
I looked it up. It is.
Okay.
I was like, I think that, and I'm like, I can look this up. I have Google on my computer.
There you go.
March 9th, we've got the new moon. So, but that is now only, what's that, like 2 weeks away-ish? So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, things do warm up. I think that's just outside the end of our decent forecast. But the 10 days leading up from now is not looking amazing. March 10th is daylight savings time. Are you ready to change your clock, Shane?
You know, there's some things that we get sort of beat up for in Saskatchewan in terms of maybe not being as progressive, but this is one thing that I'm glad we never have to do.
No, we do. We do change our clocks here. You just don't realize it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well,
no, we do. We do because and I've learned this the hard way, is that it's you're changing the way you think, and you think I'm just joking, but I'm not, because we change from central time to mountain daylight time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, like we actually do, because if you stay on central time, then it is like it doesn't work. Like, because I thought that's what we did. And then if you're trying to figure things out in relation to, because most other places do change it, it doesn't quite work out. So we actually changed to mountain. The person who explained this to me.
I do not.
When we get him on the show, we should have done a special show with him, but he wasn't available. Is Peter Jedeke, who we had on a few weeks ago.
Yep.
We were, I don't know what we were doing or why this came up. I think because I was moving here, like 15 years ago, and I was at a meeting with him in Toronto. And I said, I'm really glad to be going out to Saskatchewan because I won't have to change. And he went, oh, no, you have to change your clock. Anyway. He's got a pretty good way of explaining it. We'll get him to do that when he's on the show.
Yeah, sounds good.
March 11th, I put this in the note. Mercury, Moon, and Jupiter, they line up. That March 11th lineup, I think that's going to look neat.
Yeah.
I've got a bush in my shot. I don't know how to change my horizon in Stellarium, clearly, but...
Yeah, well, anytime we get these lineups, it's kind of fun to observe, although... Yeah, well, you'll definitely need a clear horizon. Mercury, of course, is pretty low, but if you do have a good view of the horizon, the horizon, be kind of fun.
Yeah, I actually have my so that's due west, and in my observatory, I set the door on the western side for a whole pile of reasons, and then the way that the telescope slings over, I can actually see almost due west. I don't know if I'd get this one. But I think it would be pretty close. I think if I mounted a telescope on the outside of my telescope, I would definitely be able to get Mercury through the door of my observatory. I can see right to the western horizon there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll see how that one pans out. But I think that'll look pretty good. We're getting towards the end of Jupiter observing season, though. I think it's starting to get a little low in the evening sky to get good observations of Jupiter once we get much past sort of mid to end of March here. March 12th, we have asteroid 23 Thalia, and it's at opposition, magnitude 9.5. So definitely getting into a telescope range there. I won't argue with that. Minor planet 23 Thalia is a large main belt, also S-type asteroid discovered by J.R. Hinds on December 15th, 1852. Hinds, of course, famous for Hinds what?
Don't know.
Variable nebula.
Okay.
And it was discovered at the private observatory of W. Bishop, which was located in Hyde Park in London. And Bishop named it after Thalia, the muse of comedy. So I probably should go and take a look at this one, maybe learn something about comedy. Made up of iron and other magnesium silicates. Do you have any of those? Because you have a meteorite collection. Do you have any iron or magnesium silicate meteorites?
Yeah, I can't remember which designation it is, but I do. I'd have to go have a look. I haven't looked at that collection in quite some time.
I would like to look at that collection again. Rick brought his down last year, and I think he'll bring it down again this year. I think we're going to do a thing on meteors. I wonder if we have a good asteroid we can show people. See, that's one of those things, when we talk about live stacking or some of this other stuff, I feel like looking at something like that, like an asteroid moving through space in somewhat real time, but whereas you could go and do your live stacking or whatever, and then kind of come back to it, maybe compare the images or something. I don't know. Like even if you just like held your cell phone up and took a photo of the screen and then came back to that target, an hour or so later, and then took another photo, you should be able to see some movement, I guess, depending on how zoomed in you are. I'm guessing. I think that'd be cool for people to see.
Yeah, that would be.
March 13th, Moon pairs up with Jupiter. Says 3 degrees. That's
a little
tight.
Bit of a little bit of a gap. Some wide field telescopes will have no problem with that, but definitely a good binocular view.
Yes, so that's where you'd see Jupiter and five moons.
Yeah,
Of course, yeah. You'd see those four Galilean moons and then plus our moon. I always think that these sort of things where a planet, in particular, like Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury too, I suppose, but those sort of, planets you can see some details on or, other things close to our moon like that, that is really something else to see.
Mm-hmm.
It looks super, super cool. One of the things that I noticed, I don't know whether this was an error. I point this out because it's sort of my job to do this, is that, and I noticed this because I had it in our observer's calendar, and then I think I took it out. So I got this by running it in my planetarium software, and it's like impossible for me to run everything in planetarium software. But in a lot of the ephemeris that had come out a few years back, which is when you build all your calendars and handbooks and other sky almanacs for whatever year, this one is I think it's a mistake or something is off. Or maybe I'm wrong, but regardless, it listed it as March 15th. And even in UTC time, that didn't quite make sense to me anyway, because for us, 7 o'clock basically, and in fact, just after seven is when you'll have the best chance to see it between say seven and when they set. I think they set about maybe 8:30 or 8:45. But that's going to be your best chance of seeing the moon and Jupiter. And for us, this one works out like this is just basically for here in Regina, I think, Shane. And they are pretty tight in the sky for us. But in some of the other almanacs and handbooks and such, this one is way off. They've got it on the 15th, not even close.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that is, but I did notice that. You've heard the correction here first, folks. March 14th, the moon and the Pleiades, they are tight in this evening. And I really like it when the crescent moon is close to the Pleiades because it's a couple days before first quarter. So it's not like overwhelmingly bright. It's still bright. Of course, you're going to see like a nice crescent. It's not a thin crescent, but it's still a good crescent. And it's... I don't know, maybe about a degree or so away from the Pleiades for us here in the middle of North America. And so for basically anybody in North America this night, it's going to be close. I guess for those who are west of us, maybe over like in Vancouver area, I wonder if some of those stars aren't going to get occulted that night.
Yeah, maybe. That would be kind of neat to observe.
I think it's gotta. It's gotta. I mean, I think even here it's going to be close. But I think if you're like in Calgary or draw a line through North America vertically, I think if you're west of Calgary or so, I think you're going to see some occultations. I think for here it'll even be close, so yeah. I think that'll be cool. I've seen the moon drive right straight across through the Pleiades before, but that's a rich star field even like over that next hour or so. Here I have it set for like 8:15. But I think by like 9 o'clock, it's going to be going over some moderately, sixth magnitude stars, even for us.
Yeah, that would be neat to just check out and see what it would, if it will occult or not.
Yeah, and see it from your yard even.
Mm-hmm.
Or my driveway. March 17th, of course, that's St. Patrick's Day. I feel like there was an astronomical event that day, but I got too wrapped up in St. Patrick's Day. One too many green beers while I was making the podcast, maybe. Uh-oh. Shane. Yeah. Uh-oh. Hmm. Do you know how they make green beer?
why don't you tell us?
it's just dye.
Yeah.
You thought there was... I don't know where you thought I was going with that, but it's just dye, folks.
Oh, yeah. I thought... Okay, yeah. No, I thought you'd have a joke or something. I thought... the green dye, yes.
Look, we're not joking about St. Patrick's Day here. This is not anything to laugh at. All right. March 18th, the lunar straight wall is going to be visible. That's like one of those big long escarpments on the moon that you can see in a telescope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I accidentally observed it a week or two ago. not really paying attention to what day it was. And sure enough, there it was. It's impossible to miss if you if you're putting a telescope on the moon on the right night.
Yeah, I've been chatting with Royce. I think I mentioned this earlier in the last episode or something. And he's doing these. He sent me a lunar sketch this week. I guess I got it on Friday, and I didn't reply because I put it up on my screen. I was like, "How did he do this?" He's doing using like lines to sketch the moon, which works well because the moon is. We would say the moon is like a high contrast target, right?
Yep. I would agree.
And it works really well with the lines because you get sort of that sense of high contrast with it. I'd be curious to see his sketch of the lunar straight wall. And anybody else who wants to try to sketch the lunar straight wall, I think we would all enjoy seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried to sketch the moon before?
No. Well, I did some, when I was thinking of getting into sketching, I pulled out the Cambridge Lunar Atlas. And like what you're doing now with your practice sketching, I did a little bit of that just indoors to see, you know, what was possible. And yeah, it was kind of neat, but never done it live, you know, at the eyepiece.
Yeah. I've done some lunar sketching. For some reasons, when I sketch the moon, it comes out looking... are you familiar with the Ren and Stimpy cartoons?
Not terribly. Watched The Simpsons for a little while, but then faded away.
Anyway, so, but this was like old comics from like, I don't know, like the 90s or something like that, or maybe even late 80s. And they were sort of, they had a certain style, which was very, very loose, I guess is the way you'd put it. And yeah, that's how my sketches of the moon look on a good night. They look like, they belong in, the background of a weird comic. That's what they look like, unfortunately. Okay. It's difficult. It's hard to sketch the moon.
Yeah.
So my hat's up. I think Phil from the UK has sent us some pretty damn good lunar sketches.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. He's done quite well with those, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody has lunar sketches, send them to us. actualastronomy@gmail.com. March 19th is the spring equinox. You going to go out and take a look at that?
I don't think so. Are you?
No. What would you see?
Exactly.
It'll probably be cloudy that night anyway. Let's see. I guess you could see that equal day and night. It'd be a long day for you.
Yeah, could be.
Sit there with your stopwatch out in the cold.
Mm-hmm.
I want a picture of Shane now observing the equinox. That was a rough day observing the equinox.
Just a photo of me looking at my wrist.
Sitting on a stool out there, timing that sunset and sunrise, making sure that the celestial clockwork is up to snuff.
Yep.
March 24th, though, I think this will be good. So this is a night where typically we might not be observing because that's full moon that night. However, Mercury is at its greatest elongation in the evening sky, 19 degrees from the sun. So that's getting up there, and it's a good, like, this is a good time to see Mercury. So sometimes 19 degrees, it's not enough, and this is going to be too bright and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this, because we're just past the equinox, and whenever it's doing this before the equinox, the angle's pretty good. But this one's still close enough that Mercury will be moderately high in the western sky as the sun is going down. So what you can do is just after sunset and get your local sunset time, and then wait, I don't know, like another 5 or 10 minutes so that we make sure that sun is good now, because we don't want to be looking anywhere near the sun. But, you know, you're going to need to wait until Jupiter pops out anyway. So once Jupiter pops out, what you can do is find Jupiter first, which is going to be really high just south of west, and then draw a line between Jupiter and the brightest part at the horizon, which is where the sun went down, maybe like 10 or 12 minutes before, or 20 minutes before, maybe, depending on how bright the sky is. And then you'll find Mercury about two-thirds of the way along that line towards the horizon.
Now everybody knows.
Now everybody knows. I think it's worthwhile to hunt down, take a look at Mercury. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Got a couple things. These are neat. I didn't put any comets in for this month, I just realized, but it's okay. We'll do comets next month. Maybe we'll do a whole comet episode one of these days. So we have two things that you can do towards the end of the month. sort of the last couple weeks of March, you can in the morning, you can try to follow Vega with your unaided eye into daylight. That is possible. And then you can try to follow Sirius before sunset. So the sun's going to be setting due west just about, of course, because we're around the equinox. And then, of course, Sirius is going to be way down and over to the sort of south-southwest. It's, you know, reasonably high, actually. So, you know, you can use your planetarium software to try to generally figure out where that is. The thing that I was trying to figure out is, remember Alistair was talking about like polarization, the polarization band, and seeing Jupiter back in January, whenever it was.
Yep.
I was trying to figure out if that's why these ones are sort of well placed for this visibility, but maybe it's just because of their orientation far away from the sun and, you know, being reasonably high still and that sort of thing. So anyway, something people can give a try. Yeah, I might try for spotting Sirius if we have some nice warm weather and I'm able to be staying out of the city at night and have the full moon up. So not much else to look at. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping that by that point in time, I will be rocking and rolling out at my dark sky site.
Yeah, that's something I think we're all hoping for, just to get back to some good observing.
Yeah, not that I haven't been out there. I was out there a few days ago, but yeah, I'm still back and forth somewhat, just not getting as much astronomy and just hasn't worked out to be there late at night yet, but it's coming. It's coming here shortly. So anyway, that's what I put in. I didn't put any comments in. Maybe I'll just look and see if there's, I should say this, that John Dolby sent us one of, well, just a sec. Let me go and grab it here. Did you have any double stars or anything of that nature?
Nothing that I prepped for, no.
Okay, no, that's all right. Well, here, I got it. Yeah, John Dolby sent this. He just sent this to me, and I can't remember whether he and I were chatting about it. So John is a listener down in Arizona. I think we've read at least one of his emails before. And then we've just been kind of going back and forth the odd time. He's somebody who is a very experienced both visual observer as well as an imager, though. And I think that a lot of his imaging is very much of sort of scientific value. So this one is 2021 S3 Pan-STARRS, and he sent an image here of it. Anyway, I can't pull it off my email for some reason, but let me just read this really quick. He said about Pan-STARRS, at 4:45 a.m. local time, I took the attached stack of 8x22 second exposures of Comet C. Sorry, it's 2012. It's either 2012, must be 2021. S3 Pan-STARRS, 3 hours and 15 minutes east of the meridian at an altitude of roughly 30 degrees above the horizon. Thought I'd send this in because it's a good representation of what it looks like through a 10 or a 12 inch telescope. He said, I didn't set up my daub, but I took this stack using the CPC 1100, which is an 11 inch McCassegrain grain, and Hyperstar, which renders a fair comparison of what it would look like through a similar sized, say, Dobsonian. I did that the tail would be visible in the eyepiece. Also did digital images. They tend to show a more pronounced nucleus, John says, than what you might see in the eyepiece. He goes on to say if he had set up his telescope, he thinks that he would have seen a diffuse fuzzy glow. Anyway, it's pretty cool to see this comet sort of starting to come around. And he said it was going just by a star when he sent it. You could definitely see a very, very faint tail. So I'm guessing he's right that this would look like a fuzzy out of round star through something like a 10 or a 12 inch telescope. So there we go. Yeah. 2021 S3 Pan-STARRS in the morning sky. So people want, they can go ahead and look that one up in their planetarium software.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. Another one, we'll probably touch more on this one in April, but for any of the eclipse chasers, 12P Pons Brooks, there's some speculation that during totality, that comet might be visible, but nobody really knows for sure. So during totality, everything does darken, but it gets about as dark as sort of twilight. And 12P Pons Brooks is supposed to get fairly bright, or has potential to become fairly bright in April. And depending on whether or not it reaches a high level of brightness, it may or may not be visible during totality. And it is going to be closer to the sun at that point in time. So if anybody is planning to be on the path of totality in April, add this to your list of things that you may want to research a little bit, just to see where it will be in relation to the sun, and then see if you can see it during totality.
Man, I feel like it would have to be pretty bright for me.
Would have to be, yeah.
And the other thing is, imagine, so you go, you spend all this time, money, and blah, 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 and you end up in a spot that it's actually clear. Like, all these things have to line up, right? And now, instead of looking at the eclipse, you're going to go and look at a comet, which would be cool, but holy smokes. Like, because you got what? Like a couple minutes, you know?
That is part of the kind of the eclipse experience, though, is to sometimes see what else there is or what becomes visible. Sometimes it's planets like Mercury. And in this case, it's a comet, which is pretty cool.
Holy cow. Oh, man. I don't know. Seems risky, but yeah, that would be amazing if somebody out there did that. Yeah, I always think of some of the observers, and they would put somebody in a tent not to see the eclipse, just to read off the time, not to be distracted by the event. So they weren't allowed to look at it. They could just look at the clock, read off the time to everybody. That poor sucker.
Terrible.
Eh? Yeah. This is not like that, but. Anyway, that just occurred to me. Yeah. All right. That's cool. Anything else that you've got there?
Nope. That's it.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Please share the show with other stargazers you know, and send us your ideas, observations, and questions to actualastronomy@gmail.com.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. If you are interested in more information, would like to contact us, or if you would like to support the podcast, check out our website, actualastronomy.com.